Good morning and welcome to KRFY's Community Conversations. I am Julie Calamine, your morning show host. My usual partner in crime, Phil, is away this week. So watch out, everybody. Community Conversations is an alternative to the live KRFY morning show. Our live studio has been closed for over a year due to COVID. We have begun to reopen the studio for some programs, so stay tuned. This conversation will have been recorded prior to its airing, so it is possible that some information may have changed. And now on to today's community conversation. We are about to learn all about phenology. And with that, I would like to introduce Aaron Posthumus, and I hope I have the pronunciation of your name correct. Aaron, is it Posthumus or Posthumus?
We say Posthumus, but it's fine either way.
A third choice, Posthumus. Well, Aaron, you are the outreach coordinator and liaison to the USFWS USA National Phenology Network at the University of Arizona in Tucson. Hello.
Hello.
So can you define phenology for us? It's a big word.
Sure. Yeah. So phenology, it sounds like a wonky word, but it's really something that's very simple and something that you probably have already noticed in your everyday life. And the definition that we like to use at the USANPN is it's basically the timing of plant and animal life cycle events and their relationship to climate and other abiotic variables.
Okay, so sort of the observation of plants and animals and climate over time from season to season, year to year.
Yeah, basically the science of the seasons.
Yeah, that's simple. I like that. So then it's obviously not phrenology, which I understand to be the study of the shape and size of the cranium as an indicator of mental abilities.
It's definitely not that.
Phrenology. Okay, good to know. So we understand what it is. It's a study of the seasons over the years. And what do you think is cool about it?
You know, I think that what's really special about phenology is it lets you get outside and really start to notice really small things that change over the seasons. And you might have, you know, observed flowers around you or when leaves are coming out on trees or when they're changing color in the fall. But when you start to really pay attention to phenology, you start to see tiny little things that you wouldn't have otherwise noticed. So it might be that you see when a flower is fully opened and it's ready for pollination. Or you might notice when the flower or the leaves first start to change color on a tree in the fall. And it just lets you really slow down and appreciate all of those little changes.
Yeah. And appreciate your time outside more.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You really start to become a keen observer when you start to pay attention to phenology.
Yeah, that's neat. So is this a science that people learn about in school? Is there like a high school or college program about phenology?
You know, there's not a degree program that I'm aware of. There are many universities that have courses that include phenology, but it's really a science that transects a lot of other sciences. So if you think about botany or animal behavior, ecology, all of those have phenology in them. It's just kind of a way to look at a science that involves a lot of different things in the environment.
Yeah, when you think about it, it covers a lot of areas, plants, animals, insects, climate, everything.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm going to back up just a bit and ask you to tell the listeners a bit about you, your background, and how did you come to be interested in this area?
Yeah, so I've always been really interested in animals, and I started out as a kid collecting bugs and putting them in jars and looking at them closely. And when I was in college, I was really interested in environmental biology and conservation. And when I came to graduate school here in Tucson, I still had never heard of the word phenology, but I found the USA National Phenology Network and I learned all about phenology, and it quickly became a great interest. And I think it's nice because I do really like to learn about all different kinds of wildlife as well as plants. And phenology lets me do that because I'm able to study a little bit of everything.
Yeah, it lets you be a bit of a generalist, and it's so accessible. A person can just get out and begin.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's neat. Tell us more about the work that you do with the University of Arizona. You're a liaison.
Yeah. So as outreach coordinator, a lot of what I do is communication with people that are data collectors for our Nature's Notebook program. I also work a lot with different partners. We have hundreds of different partners all across the country. So a lot of just communicating with them about all of the resources that we have and findings that researchers are discovering about phenology. And then as the liaison to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, I'm able to work with national wildlife refuges across the country to help them get started with phenology monitoring and create different resources and things to help them meet management and outreach needs.
That must be interesting work.
It is. Yeah, it's a nice variety.
Yeah, all over the country. Let's go ahead and jump back into phenology. And is there a history? Have there been pioneers of phenology? Are there people we might know?
Yeah, so, you know, phenology, the concept has been around as long as humans have. I think the first phenologists were probably indigenous people. You know, they depended on knowing about when things were happening to know about, you know, when to collect food or plant different crops. And so they really paid attention to the timing of different events in plants and animals to know when to take those different actions. An example of that you can see today is some of you might be aware of the Farmer's Almanac and all of the different moons that you hear about. So there's the strawberry moon and the beaver moon. And those actually come from indigenous people. I think the Algonquin is the primary source of those kind of different moons. But the concept has just been around forever.
I was listening to another community radio station this morning, and they were mentioning that it was the sugar bush moon. Is that universal, or does that relate to areas? That was a Minnesota moon.
You know, I haven't heard of that one, so that's interesting. I'll have to
maybe it's
that
a
too.
Local, yeah, local yeah, moon name, neat. Right? Oh, and so is there anybody prominent in the field that listeners might know about? Someone we might think of as a sort of outstanding phenologist.
You know, there are so many people that are, you know, researchers that are looking at phenology data and discovering new things about it. I don't know if I could talk about all of them. We have a few people that we've worked with in the last few years to help them, you know, collect data that they need and start to answer questions about phenology. People in the U.S. government. So there's a woman, Janet Purvey, who's working on trying to understand how culturally important food plants, especially up in the Northwest, are shifting in their fruiting timing. So things like hazelnut and Oregon grape. We also worked with a researcher at Penn State, Erin Maynard Bean, and she did some really amazing work on looking at the difference between invasive and native shrubs. And I could just go on and on. There's so many, but I think a lot of the great phenologists today are just everyday people because it's something that everyone can do.
Yeah, that's neat to hear that. Yeah, scientists just don't show up on People magazine every week, do they?
Right.
We don't hear their names.
Not as glamorous.
No, but important. Maybe not glamorous, but very important. Well, all right. So who studies phenology other than just people at home? The universities you've mentioned, you're with USFS. And who else? What other entities are interested?
So yeah, we have hundreds of partners all across the country. You mentioned the federal partners, the National Park Service and the Fish and Wildlife Service are very interested in understanding how their public lands are changing and how the plants and animals are being impacted by things like climate change. We also have a lot of different types of organizations like botanic gardens and arboreta, nature centers, land trusts. Even community groups, people like in neighborhood associations and things like that, that are collecting phenology information for their own purposes.
Yes, helpful from year to year to just understand what's happening. An example I know is that when I lived in Minnesota, I lived on a lake, that had been populated since the late 1800s. And it was always recorded ice on the lake and ice off the lake. And that's a small detail, but yet it's very useful.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's so many different applications of phenology and, you know, people are interested in understanding invasive species and that can help with doing management to try to control those species. So we have a really bad invasive grass here called buffle grass. And by knowing about when that plant greens up, then managers can know when to go out and treat it with herbicide. So that's been really useful to be able to look at the phenology of that plant and help control it.
Yeah, that makes sense. What other types of useful information come out of this sort of research?
So yeah, there's lots of things that relate to recreation as well. So thinking about like wildflower season, or, you know, like the cherry blossom festival and knowing when that's happening, fall leaf color, especially for people in the Northeast where they have the leaf peepers that come and trying to decide when that's going to happen so they can do promotion for those different kind of festivals. And then, of course, you know, it's a great way to look at climate change impacts. So there's so many different applications there, and being able to see mismatches between a flower and its pollinator, different, you know, migratory birds and their food resources. So there's just so many different things you can learn by looking at phenology.
You know, that's so true. It's as we're recording today, it's before the date that it will be that we'll be posting or playing this interview. But I'm just debating whether it's the day to put out my hummingbird feeder or if I'm a little bit too early. And if I kept better track, of course, I would know whether it's a bit early or not. And
yeah,
so many
exactly.
details. Yeah. So it helps with things like that. I'm going to take a moment and just let listeners know once again that if you're just joining us, you are listening to KRFY Community Conversations. This is Julie Calamine, your morning show host. And today I'm being joined by Aaron Posthumus, which I may still have mispronounced, who is the outreach coordinator and liaison to the USFWS, the USA National Phenology Network at the University of Arizona in Tucson. So we'll continue on. Aaron, for those of us, those listening here in the Idaho Panhandle, how might they think about becoming a phenologist?
Yeah, so it's pretty simple. You can sign up for an account with our Nature's Notebook program, and that is a plant and animal data collection program. And so you can decide where you want to do observations. You can make a what's called an observation site in your backyard, or maybe another nearby place that you go to often. It could be a park near your house, or a trail that you like to go to. And so you just set up an account and you create a site, and then you can add plants and animals to it.
Okay, so the your observations are connected to a physical location. I would think that would be very helpful. From scientific standpoint.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the special thing about the way we do Nature's Notebook is, especially with the plant observations, you actually tag an individual plant and you go back to it over and over. So it really allows you to get to know that plant and what it's doing in different seasons. And it, as you said, it gives you the ability to look at what's happening in different years. So it could be, you know, this year, maybe it's warmer than normal. And so you see your plant leafing out or flowering at a different time than it did last year. And it really lets you see those little changes that happen from year to year.
Right. What if you're a person who's like me, 57, and hasn't begun a notebook? Is there still time? Should I bother?
Oh, yeah, of course. We'll take any observation. They're all valuable. I think you can start small and just start observing a couple things and see how it goes. And then you can always add more things later.
Yeah, so that seems like a very simple way to get going, to go online and become part of Nature's Notebook, and know that it would really be helpful for many, many people who are studying phenology. But what if you're not quite ready to maybe go online and do something like that? Is there an even simpler way? What about the old practice of journaling, that sort of thing?
Yeah, for sure. Keeping a nature journal is a really great way to get into just the practice of making observations and writing things down. I think those long-term records are so important. And so if you can start by just jotting down a few things, then that can be really valuable as well. There's some ways to, you can make your own journal if you want. There's also a great book called The Naturalist Notebook that kind of provides you a template for writing things down, and it gives you a little bit of guidance for doing that. So that's one option, but you can always just, you know, take your favorite notebook or your diary and just write things down in there too.
That's right. You know, something that I've noticed as I'm learning more about phenology is that, as you said, there are so many partners that collect bits and pieces of the overall phenology picture. And I can think of one such as the Audubon Society collecting information about birds. That's so important. And other groups like the Master Naturalists that work and live in the Idaho Panhandle. Are there other small nonprofits people might think about connecting with if they're not quite comfortable with just sitting out in a Thoreau-like state observing nature?
Yeah, I would look at local groups like you mentioned. Master Naturalists and Master Gardeners make excellent observers, so we always like to talk to those groups. And Audubon groups as well. There are certain wildlife refuges that have friends groups too, and sometimes that can be a great way to get involved with a group of people to do these kind of things together. Sometimes there are events like BioBlitzes that happen too, and that can be a great way to kind of dip your toes into trying out, making observations and learning to identify different species.
And Erin, I'm really glad that you mentioned BioBlitz, because your interview is going to be airing a week after one we've just done with our own local coordinator of a BioBlitz, and that's the City Nature Challenge that's happening for the first time in Bonner County, Idaho. That's going to be happening April 30th through May 3rd. And it's coordinated through the East Bonner County Library, and then of course through Nature's Notebook and that kind of thing. So for folks who are thinking about a little phenology, but not quite sure where to get started, this might be a really great way to get going. Yes.
Yeah, definitely. BioBlitzes are really fun too. There's like so many enthusiastic people there, and there's often experts, so you can learn a lot. So it's a really great time.
And learn a lot about plants and animals and insects, all that sort of thing in a short amount of time, and have some fun doing it. It's competition, yes?
Yeah. You want to get the most species possible.
Right. So that's pretty neat. Another organization that I thought of that's somewhat involved here in the Idaho Panhandle is the Xerces Society. And they're so interested in insects and the butterflies and the bumblebees, and do quite a bit of informational outreach about those species here in our panhandle. So they're a little phenologists too, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we actually also have a data collection campaign that's focused on species that the Xerces considers to be important for pollinators, and that's called Nectar Connectors. So that's one of our Nature's Notebook campaigns. So if you want to get involved with Nature's Notebook and you're not sure what species to pick, one of our campaigns is a great way to do it, because you already have the knowledge that your data will be used directly by someone. And it already picks the species for you, so it makes that part a little bit easier. So that includes a lot of different nectar plants, anything from milkweeds to thistles and lupins and all those kind of plants.
Yeah, fun. Erin, why don't you tell us about your website, give us the address, and tell us what listeners might find if they were to go online and take a look at the USA National Phenology Network.
Yeah, so you can go to www.naturesnotebook.org, or you can just search for Nature's Notebook online and it'll come up. And once you get to the homepage, then you can just click on the Become an Observer link, and that'll help get you set up with an account, and it'll walk you through setting up an observation site and then adding different plants and animals.
Mm-hmm. Will it also help you identify, help you learn what you're viewing?
Yeah. So we do have a lot of different training resources. We have a observer certification course that you can take. It only takes about 45 minutes, and it gives you all the basics that you need to know about how to observe. If you need help with species identification, we always recommend checking in with your local cooperative extension office. They're a really great resource for trying to figure out what plants you have in your yard. There's also a couple of really great apps that you can use. There's one called Leaf Snap that you can actually take a picture of a plant and it'll tell you what species it is. And then there's another app that's through iNaturalist called Seek, and that also will help you identify species that you're looking at. So lots of great resources to help you out with that.
And how has your success been with those two apps? Do you find that they're fairly good? What's been your experience?
You know, my experience here in the Southwest is they're not super great, because we do have some weird plants down here. And I think they have trouble with some of our little leaves on the tiny leaves that we have on trees here, like our mesquites and things like that. But I understand from friends in other parts of the country that they work pretty well on species in more temperate areas.
Oh, good. Good to hear it. We're definitely a temperate area in the panhandle. So those two apps might be great. Leaf Snap, Seek. Well, all right. We've covered a lot here and talked about phenology. Is there anything I'm missing? Anything you might like to add, references, additional info, et cetera?
Yeah. So one TV series that's been really great that came out a couple years ago, it was on PBS. It's called The Crowd and the Cloud. And if you want inspiration on just the impact that volunteer collected data can have, that's a really great one to check out. And you can watch the episodes on PBS or the Crowd in the Cloud website. There's also a bunch of books out there that are great. Some of the ones that I like are, there's a handbook of citizen science in ecology and conservation. And that's like basically a manual for getting started with creating a program. Probably more appropriate for teachers or people that are looking to, you know, start up a larger effort. And then there's another book that I like called Janie Monarch Seed. It's about a girl who's planting seeds to help support monarchs across the country. So that's a great kids book as well.
Yeah, imagine that as milkweed plants, yes?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
of course, that's great. So if I haven't asked this question exactly before, I'm going to ask it or ask it again. Are there obvious benefits? We've talked about like the recreational benefits of phenology and the personal benefits. Are there any other benefits that we've missed? Does it benefit the economy?
Well, there's a benefit to science for sure and conservation and you know, when you collect data as part of the Nature's Notebook program as well as other programs, you can be assured that the data will be used by scientists and others to really make a difference. So you know, you're not just submitting your observations out into the ether. Your data are going into a repository and they're going to be downloaded and used and help to understand how things are changing. And really make a difference for conservation.
Yeah, truly scientific addition to what we know about the world, and a reason to maybe not run out and buy the journal that you write in and maybe just get right onto Nature's Notebook and start adding your information to everyone else's.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, good. Well, good. Well, with that, I'm going to conclude this KRFY community conversation, and I would like to thank you, Erin Posthumous, for telling us everything we need to know about getting going in phenology and sharing information about the ways to get involved and why it's worth doing. So I just appreciate having you here chatting with us very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. This has been KRFY Community Conversations, talking all about phenology with me, Julie Calamine, and Erin Posthumous. Posthumous, I'll get it right by the end, maybe. And for those of you listening, just do remember that we would love it if you would continue to wear your masks, get your COVID vaccine, and stay tuned for a soon-to-be-more-open KRFY studio. Thank you for listening.